Yes, you're on the podcast where we talk trash about the things people love to hate and hate to love. And we're your hosts, Shelby and Matt.
Yes, yes, yes. And I am coming to you with a question today, which is a headline that I saw and then did not investigate any further. I was like, I'll wait and ask Shelby for this. Which Vulture ran an article with the headline is Taylor Swift writing a song for Toy Story 5? Is this, what is going on?
So it all coalesced around one thing, which is her website suddenly had a countdown to to something like this weekend, but it was very quickly deleted. It was like up for 1 minute and then deleted. But people were like, oh my gosh, what could this be? What could it be? And then the connection was made that she was papped coming out of a, you know, New York restaurant or something, wearing a bright blue dress with a bright yellow bag.
Okay.
And people were like, wait, the background of this countdown was blue with very like pixely cartoonish clouds. And that was reminiscent of Toy Story, you know, the cloud.
Yes, the wallpaper.
Cloud background, yeah. And then her color-coded outfit was very Toy Story. And I think there was something about the dates lining up, because Toy Story 5 comes out June 15th or whatever.
Okay.
And so there was something about the timeline.
June is four letters. That's one letter and three letters. 13. Okay. Yes.
Yeah. No, because there, I don't remember if the countdown was going to June 15th. I don't think so, though, because people realized the countdown came and went and nothing happened. So I got confused too, but generally the consensus was her look, the background of this countdown that was quickly deleted, and the history of her writing songs for movies was like, well, maybe she's doing a Toy Story 5 thing.
Okay.
The countdown came and went, nothing happened, but now the thought is, well, it was clearly posted in error, like they deleted it very quickly, so maybe it was posted too early. So the announcement is yet to come. But I do not think there is any insider industry, she did a song for this trailer or anything. Uh-huh. So there's no proof yet, but that is the current thought.
Interesting, because so clearly something is going on.
It seems weird that there's like, of all the things, there'd be some sort of countdown that could accidentally be created and deleted. Like, it seems like, okay, something, she has something at least in the works to be announced.
So the countdown was up for like truly like just a minutes. Short period of time. Okay. And then it was taken down. There's been no sort of mention of it from anybody on her team or anything like that.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it feels like she could very well have a new album coming at some point. Like, because when did the last one come out? Last summer? Last
her album? Fall?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was last year. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like, okay. She could.
I don't think anyone thinks it's an album.
Like a full album.
I don't think anyone thinks it's like, I think that's the thing, is like the rumor is she's getting married this summer.
Right.
She probably won't be doing, she's obviously not touring this. Like, so I think people were like, okay, well, what would a countdown be for? And she's done countdowns for like merch drops.
Yeah.
And so people were like, well, it's probably something lame like that. But then the fact that it was like quickly deleted, and also that its backdrop was so vastly different than her Life of a Showgirl like aesthetic. I think it's like the clouds were like very instantly. Oh
yeah. Toy Story.
Toy Story. So, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised, but it would be pretty funny either way if it does happen or doesn't.
And she, like, yeah, she has wanted an Oscar. That's very clearly something that she has wanted. She was also just did the interview for, was it New York Times Magazine of, like, the best songwriters?
The New York Times, yeah.
Yes, so that's going on. And
and the blue dress, like, is aesthetically different than what she's been wearing, which is usually more earth tone, like, whatever. And she uses those as Easter eggs. And she had a horseshoe necklace. So it's like, okay. If it is true, it's, like, on par with, like, the lack of subtlety.
Right, yes.
But if it's not true, it's also like, well, yeah, she, her fashion, her aesthetic, like, changes. So it's like,
right.
But I guess I am in the camp leaning towards probably.
I mean, clearly the countdown is for something.
Yeah.
And it does feel like, okay, it's probably not like a merch thing.
Yeah.
That would that, it, does the clouds, does that connect at all to the, for like the, one of the albums that's been, that, that
I guess you could maybe, like, clouds to me are very 1989 coded. Like, she did
right.
The whole,
oh yeah. When we already, like, did that. Yeah. So that's you probably, could maybe say
you, but probably not.
It's probably not anything connected to her wedding.
Right. That would be so funny.
That would be weird. So they accidentally put the wedding website onto her website instead of to the... But imagine, though, like, having, like, a countdown clock on your, like, wedding RSVP thing.
Yeah, during.
Yeah, I could see that. I also think that makes a ton of sense. She hasn't done a song for a movie in a bit, but obviously she likes doing that. Mm-hmm. I think that a song for a Toy Story movie is a classic, like, a couple of those have won Oscars in the past. Yeah. That feels like it's a very, like, prestigious film, and that it's probably a movie that's going to be good. So I could definitely see them tapping her and her writing this. You know who else was on those covers of New York Times Magazine, though, was Diane Warren, my girl. I'm like, good luck, Taylor. You're going to have to go through Diane to get that Oscar.
I mean, everyone has at this point, and she still hasn't won.
Maybe not this year. She said that she has some exciting things coming up. Also, there's I think she wrote some kind of song or another for Hacks. I don't know if you're following this at all. Are you watching Hacks this season?
I mean, I plan to. I just haven't started. Okay.
Because there's a part at the end of one of the episodes where Jean Smart, like, needs a song for something. And she's like, let's call Diane Warren. And then Diane Warren posted something on Instagram that was, like, about how she's excited for people to see whatever she did on Hacks. But there were two new episodes that released this week, and she was not in either of those. So we shall see when she pops up. This week's episode... Deborah and her daughter, played by Caitlin Olsen, go on the Celebrity Amazing Race, and it is incredible. Like, the level that they are operating this season is, I think, so much higher than even the last couple of seasons of Hacks, which were already good. I'm endlessly impressed. But anyways, while we're talking about speculating on pop stars, I feel like we should also bring up the Beyonce Act 3 of it all.
Yes. As we talked about it vaguely last week, but then, there was movement.
Yes, because as we are recording now, it is several hours before the Met Gala, so perhaps you'll know more when this episode drops tomorrow morning. But Beyonce is one of the co-chairs of the Met Gala. She hasn't gone in, I think, 10 years, maybe even longer. So her returning is a big deal. Although this year's Met Gala is sort of plagued with issues because of the Jeff Bezos of it all. I followed this this Instagram account. I don't know if this has stumbled across your desk yet, but it's these people who are like, they do this, like, anti-billionaire sort of, like, guerrilla advertising stuff. And they hid, like, hundreds of bottles of fake pee around the Met in nod to the fact that people who work at Amazon warehouses, like, have to pee in bottles because they don't have time to pee during their shifts. And I'm just like... ooh, like, this is rough. I don't think we've heard of anybody dropping out yet, but
Bella Hadid posted about, like, or reposted someone saying, like, I better not see any ice pins at an event hosted by Jeff Bezos. Like,
oh, yes.
Critical. So I imagine she won't show up, which would be surprising because she's been to like every single one.
Mm-hmm.
And then Meryl Streep is also not coming, but that seems, her team said it's more because it's never been an event she's interested in.
Mm-hmm.
But those are the two I saw that are like official no's.
Well, the thing with the Met Gala that's interesting is like, because you get invited by a table, it's like you would sort of have to go out of your way to make an announcement that you're not, or that you said no to somebody. Like, you, because if you just show up, if you just aren't there, it doesn't really say anything, because it could be, oh, nobody asked you this year, or like the person who asked you, you didn't want to go. You know, it's like there's, it's not like the Oscars where it's like, oh, there's going to be a specific set of people who we know are going to be there. And if someone decides not to go, it's like a big deal. With this, it's like, oh, well, maybe, you know, Cardi B, I mean, Cardi B probably got asked, but it's like, maybe she would go, maybe she wouldn't go. It might not necessarily just be a political thing. You would have to like say, oh, and the reason why I'm not going is because of X, Y, and Z. I was asked, but I turned them down.
Yeah.
Which it seems like people haven't done yet. Anyways, Beyonce will be there.
Yeah.
And Act 3 is coming at some point. We're sort of past the point in the schedule where Acts 1 and 2 dropped. So it's a little bit like, okay, everyone's on the edge of their seat. There was a section of the website that had Cowboy Carter merch on it that has now all been removed. So the only merch that you can buy on Beyonce's website is just sort of like generic Beyonce merch or stuff related to like her skincare or her alcohol brand or whatever. So people are like, okay, feels like an era shift is coming. And then also on her website, there is a very strange video. There's a section dedicated to Destiny's Child, what, like 20th anniversary or whatever, some sort of anniversary with Destiny's Child. And there's a video of the members of Destiny's Child hugging Stevie Nicks. And there's not a lot of other celebrities on her website. It's mostly just her or Destiny's Child and then this weird Stevie Nicks clip, which people are reading as, oh, because it's supposedly going to be a rock album, there's going to be... either Stevie Nicks worked on it or she has a song or things are going to be in the style of her in Fleetwood Mac. So people are getting excited about that. And then, yes, obviously the Met Gala feels like a great place to introduce a new style era, even if it's not like, oh, and here's my album, it's coming out. So I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what she shows up in tonight. Do you have any other sort of Met Gala takes or anything before that happens?
No.
No.
That's all.
This year is weird. It's like costumes and the body. But then I was listening to people sort of like fashion people talk about it. And it seems very, and they were like, oh, this is one of the most vague themes we've had in years. And I was like, oh, okay. So it's actually not like costume. Like I thought people were going to show up like in costumes, but I don't think that's the energy.
Because they have like the two theme, like there's the theme of the exhibit and then there's the actual dress code that people are getting. Right. And I feel like, I don't remember what it was this year.
Yeah,
fashion
is art, bodies, costumes. It's something. It's a lot of things intertwined. I don't know why they don't make the themes slightly more concrete, because I feel like that usually yields more interesting looks. But you know, who am I to judge Anna Wintour?
Yeah.
I'll save that for the Devil Wears Prada 2 episode that's coming Thursday.
Also important update from last year. I spent 30 minutes reading this Vulture article about Justin Baldoni and Blake Lively.
Okay.
It is like a huge piece and very, very engaging. Like someone clearly did the work, went through all these texts, all the things that have been, you know, deposed and subpoenaed and whatever, and really put together a thorough timeline of events. And I was just like eating it up. I was engaged. It's on Vulture. It's by Reeves Weedman, and it's called Regretting Us: How the Feud Between Blake Lively and Justin Baldoni Led to a $300 million Trial That Could Torch Both Their Careers. And you know what? It's like, you know, I'm pretty much, I believe Blake Lively's version of events, where Justin Baldoni is kind of a weirdo and set out to destroy her when he felt like she was threatening his feminist standing.
Yes.
But I hadn't like really, like I followed the story, but I hadn't ever read any of these like, you know, texts beyond the highlighted Taylor Swift ones or whatever that got pulled. And it is pretty wild, like what was going on set. And I also think it's pretty interesting, like how aggressive the Team Baldoni still is. Like if you Google like, oh, Vulture, Blake Lively article to find it, like all of the, you know, like how Reddit pulls their most, they're like, you want to read this on Reddit? It's like, oh, all yeah, from like the subreddit, like Team Baldoni, saying this is like biased. This is just like a hit piece against Baldoni. I'm like, why are you guys standing this man? I don't understand. Like, I think the only logical camp is they're both kind of weirdo, bad people, narcissists. And also, I could see why she was so uncomfortable and weirded out by this man. Because there is one story where he like told her multiple times that he'd psychically connected to her dead grandfather, and it's like, what? why are you telling your ghost star this? It's so fucking weird. And then it was like worse things, like the whole, oh, I have back problems, I want to know how much you'll weigh so I can like train to do a lift with you in this movie, after she had a baby. But there was one, oh yeah, he's like in this religion or whatever with Rainn Wilson of all people, but he like really believes in a hug forward set. And so, oh, and God, what's funny too is like Jenny Slate is like very against him too. And I respect Jenny Slate more than I respect Blake Lively. Well, and she was like, really, she would like send funny texts about like, why are we hugging so much on this set? And then there's just like a lot of weird notes about how Baldoni wanted to shoot the sex scenes and all these like climactic moments. And at one point he tells her he thinks the most feminist thing they could do in the movie is to have the man perform oral sex and then tell her he doesn't need to be come to completion either, because it's like, it's enough that he pleased his woman. Mm-hmm. And Blake is like, okay, I don't. And then he would like tell her about like how that happens in his sex life and stuff. And then Justin Baldoni's argument is like, I have all these insecurities about always saying the wrong thing, and now that's being used against me, and it's blah, 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 blah. And it's like, well, maybe you shouldn't be directing a movie if you don't know how to talk to people, especially women. But all of it was very, very interesting. Clearly, I wouldn't be surprised, you know, if there is a bias per se. Like, it does read in favor of Blake Lively, while also saying like, maybe this wasn't the, you guys were both difficult, and maybe this wasn't the fight to
bring the article court.
Yeah, but I do feel like it was just excellent reporting, and I think this is like one of the bigger, messier, uglier, more fascinating pop culture fights of our generation. And I cannot wait for the like full,
for the full novel, court,
the full book, the full history of this. I don't know how the court will go. I think this piece you know, released in Vulture, released in New York, where the case will be. It'll be interesting to see how it sways public opinion.
I mean, people love a celebrity courtroom issue. I mean, think about like when Cardi B was testifying for whatever that was, or the Gwyneth Paltrow ski trial, obviously an iconic moment. I was just looking to see how many followers Justin Baldoni has, because I was like, how is this man like have fans? He seems like such a low level celebrity to me. He has 4 million Instagram followers, which is a lot. I'm like, it's are those from Jane the Virgin, or is this like, oh, he like, are a lot of these people who have like joined following him post all of this drama to sort of like keep up to date? I mean, Blake Lively has 40 million followers, so obviously a lot more. She is a huge name. Much bigger than Justin Baldoni. But yeah, it is fascinating. I wonder how much this is impacting other celebrities in their sort of maneuvering of the ecosystem of fame. Because I can imagine publicists being like, do not do this. We do not want a Blake Lively, Justin Baldoni situation. Like, if you go on Twitter, you think that it might help you, it will drag you both down. Yeah. You both look like crazy people, like avoid at all costs.
Yeah. Yeah. No, but if anyone's like tangentially interested in this case or wants like someone to summarize it, like this, it is an excellent article. Like, very grab your popcorn, wear your florals, enjoy the read type of thing.
Yes, wear your florals. I love it. Well, also, your girl, Brittany Levitt, has been in the news because she's apparently leaving the Secret Lives of Mormon Wives. You're a big fan.
No,
well, the two of
please.
You, you're very similar in my mind.
Oh my God, that is the rudest thing you've ever said to me based on Z-Way's interview with her alone. Like, I refuse. I refute that completely.
Do you have any black friends, Shelby? That's the question. How are you feeling about the Secret Lives of Mormon Wives in general, given the Taylor, Frankie Paul, like Whitney Levitt leaving? It sort of feels like the show might be kind of done.
But then also there's an LA version about it, which is nothing at all. I've never watched it. I obviously know the drama outside of it around Taylor, Frankie Paul. Whitney Levitt is the only other one who's like crossed
into
your
my classmates. Shelby.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We famously went to dance class together and all the things. But no, I hear Whitney Levitt, she's mastered this, like, I don't know, the stepping stone into everything else she wants. She made the show look beneath her, and that's impressive. Supposedly she's getting her own reality show. That's what I saw her hint at. But yeah, the Secret Life of Mormon Wives seems sort of like on the fritz. Because no one liked the last season, right?
I don't know. I didn't watch it. But I think the thing with her is, like, she's kind of cringe, but she went on Dancing with the Stars and obviously did well, and then had this sort of like robbed energy because she didn't make it to the finale, even though she was probably the best dancer there. But seemingly she's always wanted to do theater stuff.
Oh yeah.
And now she's selling out Chicago in ways where it's like week after week, they're the highest performing weeks of Chicago that have ever happened. So
wait, have you gone to see it?
No.
You're doing your Broadway walks and you haven't gone to see Chicago?
I have a vendetta against Chicago, the show, which I don't know if I've talked about this on the podcast before. I love the movie Chicago.
Yeah.
It is an incredible film. One of our best picture winners, I would argue. Like, the way that they turn the musical into a movie with these like dream sequences and stuff, it's just so well done. The acting's great. Catherine Zeta-Jones is like a dancer, Queen Latifah, like, just amazing. I probably watch the Hot Honey Rag sequence like once a month. And
wow, okay.
So I went to see the show on Broadway and was like, oh, this is going to be a like sort of life-changing theatrical experience. Like, you know, finally getting to see this movie on stage. The Broadway version is the lamest thing I have ever seen. For there's a whole bunch of like reasons why this is. It's in the smallest Broadway theater and it's been on for a long time, so they can't really like do anything with it, but they don't want to get rid of it because they couldn't really put any other shows in the space just given like the restrictions of the set and stuff. So it's so it's kind of like Chicago is going to be running on Broadway for forever for these various reasons. They can't really do anything about it. But then the cast is like half people who have been doing it for 15 years and are phoning it in and like do not care at all. And then half the cast are like people like fresh off the bus from Missouri. Like this is their first Broadway gig. They've got so much energy and like razzmatazz. And so the entire chorus just fumes like ill matched with each other because some people are giving way too much and some people aren't giving enough. The whole orchestra is on stage, so there's really not actually that much room for the cast to sort of like move around. Half the time you've got these like bad stunt casting people in there who can't really like sing or dance. I mean, I think Whitney Levitt like actually is probably fairly good. But it's just so disappointing as a show. And then the Hot Honey Rag comes at the end, which in the movies, like that big giant wall of light bulbs. And I was like, okay, perfect. Like, here we go. On the show, it is a wall of like Party City streamers that drop down. It is like tinsel. It is not light bulbs. I'm like, what are we doing here? This is so embarrassing to everybody involved. And once I saw it once, I was like, I do not care if like the Pope himself is in a production. I will not be going to see this. Like, it's so terrible. It just makes me mad. So I didn't go see Pamela Anderson. I didn't go see, you know, it's like I haven't seen any of these people because the show is infuriating.
Yeah.
And so I have not seen Whitney Levitt, but I am sort of happy for her. In that she is getting her dream. Now her husband's in an off-Broadway something or another. And I'm like, she can kind of do whatever she wants. Like, she's obviously bringing money into Broadway. If she wants to go be in Anne Juliet or she wants to go be in Six or whatever, it's like, yeah, she can kind of stunt cast herself around Broadway in a similar way that like Jinx Monsoon has been doing and bring in big audiences. I don't understand exactly who her fan base is, but I love that she's getting to do what she's wanted to do.
I think it's women aged 20 to 46 or whatever that metric is. But yeah, that was her last show of Chicago, right?
Yes.
And she made the big announcement. So yeah, we'll see what happens next. I mean, it is interesting. Like, Taylor Frankie Paul starts as the star, but now Whitney Levitt is definitely like fan favorite, even almost in spite of the show, because the first season she was kind of the villain, right? And then she bowed out for like a chunk of it and then came back. And I don't know. It's a very strange arc, but yeah, she's kind of having this self-imposed renaissance. So I mean, good for her.
I do feel like it is just a little bit of like the sped up version of the Anne Hathaway kind of thing where like I think she's just a little too try hard, a little too earnest, a little too pushy, and that didn't come across well when you're going up against like some of these cool girl energies. But then when you have Taylor Frankie Paul, who's an actual real life villain, then someone who just tries too hard and is, you know, doing TikTok dances in the hospital doesn't look nearly as bad. And there's something that's like, well, wait, well, maybe we should kind of reward this. She does really want it and she's putting in a lot of effort, which is not something you can say for a lot of celebrities. So, and she is talented.
Well, supposedly, you haven't seen the show, so.
Well, I mean, she was talented on Dancing with the Stars, so I'll say that. I don't know, I can't speak to her singing, but her dancing is good.
Well, that's all I had. Did you have more?
No. Do you want to do Love It or Hate It?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, what do you have?
Okay, well, I watched DTF St. Louis, which is an HBO show starring Jason Bateman and Hopper from Stranger Things.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And it started out.
This feels very.
It started out so zany, so weird. A friend recommended it and was like, "This is like so funny in the weirdest way." And yeah, the first like two or three episodes are very like hard to get a tone read on. Like they're very mm-hmm. like. Have you seen it at all or no?
No,
I assume not. But it's about like it's about a couple in St. Louis who feel the man feels like his marriage is kind of stale, and he meets a friend, the local weatherman, who tells him about this app, DTF St. Louis, which is just like a hookup app for married people like Ashley Madison or something to have casual affairs. And then the episode ends, the guy is dead after one of these supposed meetups, and the mystery is who did it, who killed him. But it is a comedy, and it is sort of like quirky, and then it starts to unravel in this sort of suburban hellscape of, well, actually the weatherman was having an affair with the wife, but the wife was the one who sought it out and set it up, and she has some sort of nefarious reason for it. But also the weatherman is interested in the man too, and they sort of became this sexual like throuple where they'd watch each other have sex with one another. And it's just like all so weird. There's like an extended bit with David Harbour used to be, he had like one stint as a playgirl model, and so he's obsessed with his like Indiana Jones spread from that magazine when he used to be fit. It's so weird, and you'd think it's kind of like funny and just kind of all over the place, but then it ends up being really like, it's a bummer. It's a huge bummer by the end. And I just have to tell spoilers because I need to talk this out. Oh, yes.
Okay.
So basically, David Harbour's character is overweight and feels like unwanted, undesired, unloved. But okay. He's like the nicest guy. He's really kind to his wife's child, like his stepson, who it turns out has bipolar and has been struggling to make friends in class, but they're able to connect. And he's like telling him that you'll always be able to find someone who like it's really like earnest. He's a really nice guy, but his wife just is not into him. There's like a scene where she rejects him sexually and is like, I just can't get into it. And he's really down on himself. And so Jason Bateman's character is like, I'll set up a hookup for him so that he can feel good about himself. And it'll be a man because he has this fantasy of a man just getting a boner looking.
Okay.
But anyways, but then that falls apart. So David Harbour's like, oh, this guy took one look at me and literally said he didn't want to be paid to get a boner around me. And so now I feel even worse about myself. And so then Jason Bateman is, well, maybe I can get a boner around you. And so they're trying to, but he's like, no, I'm sorry. I'm not actually attracted to men, but I really like love you as a person. Like you're my best friend. But then the twist is that the stepson sees these two men sort of trying to like dance on each other and thinks he's cheating on his mom. And so he confronts him and is like, you're a douche. Like you're a loser. I hate you. Like I wish you'd die. And then David Harbour like kills himself thinking that's the only way he can save his family. And it's like such a bummer. It's like so sad. And part of it is like, oh, he's going to kill himself so that they get his life insurance. But of course, you don't get life insurance if you kill yourself. So then it ends and they're still poor. And the kid now has no supportive father figure. And the wife's still unhappy. And the only good guy in the show is dead. Can you believe it?
I'm like, did I follow any of that? Unclear.
It was such a bummer. And tonally just so uneven. It's unbelievable. But
I mean, it sounds crazy.
Yeah.
Oh, there is that.
Yeah. There's like so many, there were like all these jokes about like Jamba Juice and like, yeah, the wife is a part-time umpire for baseball games, and David Harbour can't get the image of her in her ump outfit out of his head, and so he can't like get up for he has a broken penis because of some like secret story, like a bent penis. It's like so zany on paper, but then by the end of it you're like, wow, that was just like really sad. So I don't know, I would skip it.
Well, I don't think I will be watching, but thank you for that.
You're welcome.
Great, love it. I want to talk about Adela. Do you know Adela? Mm. Are you a fan? Do you following her?
No.
So she is a pop star, a sort of new pop star on the scene. She's from Slovakia originally, but she lives in the U.S. now, I believe. She was on this show, Dream Academy, which you may know because that's the show that built Cat's Eye.
Yeah. Okay.
And basically, she sort of like, I didn't watch the show, but I've heard this sort of from various people that as they're putting together the band, like the first chunk of the season, I guess, is sort of like about them all like preparing for things. And then it's kind of like American Idol where people like vote people into Cat's Eye. And so through the early part of the season, it seemed like she was like the producer's favorite. She's like a great dancer, great singer. Like she was going to be sort of the focal point of Cat's Eye. And then the audience just really did not like her. And so she got dropped pretty quickly. And Cat's Eye formed with the six people who are in it now. But since then, she's launched a solo career. And her first album came out last year. But she just released a single called KGB, standing for KG Bitch, if you can imagine. And the song is so good. And the music video is incredible because she's a dancer. And I'm just like, we have been waiting for, I mean, I guess we have Tate McRae, who I also love. But I'm like, I love a dance-forward pop star. And it feels like we have been steering away from that in recent years. You know, it's like Olivia Rodrigo, Sabrina Carpenter, Charli XCX. Like, these are not big, like, choreo people. Like, Sabrina Carpenter might do a little, like, two-step kind of a thing. But she's not, like, full-on choreography,
right?
Which the Michael Jackson movie did make me think, remember when we used to have talented people who could dance as our pop stars as well, or like Britney Spears? So I'm excited to have her back. KGB is very good. I've been listening to it on repeat. That is my recommendation.
Okay, I'll listen to it. Thank you.
Yeah, it's like 3 minutes, but you have to watch the music video. The music video is fantastic.
Okay, so perfect.
But yes, I think that is all for this episode. We'll be back on Thursday to discuss The Devil Wears Prada 2. And then we can break down all of the Met Gala stuff, plus the Tony nominations, which I know you're very excited about next week's episode. But yes, Devil Wears Prada 2, we both watched it. I have a lot of thoughts. I assume that Shelby also has some thoughts.
We'll be breaking those down
then. Okay, thanks for listening, everyone. Bye.